Monster Man, Episode 86, Crab Man to Crypt Thing. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the Fiend Folio supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in it, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In this episode, we're finishing up our trip through the sea chapter of the Fiend Folio, and we're going to take a look at the last two monsters in it, the Crab Man and the Crypt Thing. Before we get started, though, it's time to thank a new patron. Yes, this is someone who has gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And if, like today's backer, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is all about religion, specifically about the Deities and Demigods supplement. So it's a lot of fun, and you probably would like it if you like this show. So thank you very much, Ben Paulson. Your support is greatly appreciated. Speaking of our patrons, I wanted to point out a project being hosted by a friend of the show, Eric, over on Google+. And that is a series of monster entries in a kind of monster manual-ish format created by the community and based on the art of fantasy illustrator Henry Justice Ford. So if you go over and take a look at Eric's G+, I'll try to put a link in the show notes. You can go and just like pick a monster from this, you know, archive of Henry Justice Ford illustrations and write it up. There's some amazing stuff there. It may all come out at the end. I believe the plan is to have it all come out at the end as a PDF, like just he's going to put it all in one place and organize it into a PDF that you can download. And so you'll get a bunch of cool monsters that people have created. And it's a lot of fun. So go give it a look. And it's all the illustrations are on the blog Monster Brains, which if you have not had a chance to look at before, you have a treat waiting for you, because it's really great. Okay, we've got two monsters in today's episode, and we begin with the Crab Man. The Crab Man was created, once again, by Ian Livingstone, and like a lot of Ian Livingstone's other creations, it's quite low fantasy. With the Crab Man, I think we see a monster that's consistent with the other ones that Ian Livingstone has designed in the Fiend Folio so far, right? That it's inspired by nature and natural behavior, it's quite low magic, you know, it's something that just kind of exists and has certain behaviors and certain principles that if you interact with it, you could get in trouble, rather than it's something that's actively malevolent. Now, we don't know where the Crab Man comes from, if it comes from anywhere. It is a miniature in the Fiend Factory range, but I don't think it ever appeared in the Fiend Factory column. The Fiend Factory miniatures line and the Fiend Factory column in White Dwarf don't completely overlap. So there are creatures in the Fiend Factory line that are from the Monster Manual, there are creatures from the Fiend Factory line that are from the Fiend Factory column, and there are creatures in the Fiend Factory line that aren't from anywhere, as far as I can tell. They're just specifically the Red Orcs. Now, it may be that the Red Orcs are in Fiend Factory, and I just missed them, but they were just a feature of the Fiend Factory, and I think they may have been just orc sculpts that didn't quite fit in with the other Citadel orc sculpts of the time. I don't know, but anyway, the Crab Man has quite a distinctive visual identity. In game terms, it's basically just a big, not terribly aggressive humanoid, right? It's got a lot of hit dice, but it doesn't do an enormous amount of damage, because they're basically peaceful, although sometimes they are preyed on by other species. But then they have this migratory instinct, which sometimes sends them in big kind of marauding bands across the land, and they take silver. That's their big thing. They have this instinct where they want to acquire silver. And, you know, if you don't have any silver, then you're fine. And if you do, well, those, you know, pair of D4 damage pincers seem a lot more menacing when there's, you know, 49-foot-tall humanoids with them, right? And this, I think, is inspired by the migratory behavior of crabs, which will sometimes do this. Obviously, they're not mugging people for their silver, but crabs that spend most of their time just scuttling on the beach will sometimes, you know, when it's whatever mating season or they have to give birth or I don't know what the behavior is caused by, but it's some, you know, biological imperative where they form into these columns and will, like, march from one place to another, you know, when it gets to be that time. And if you look at videos of kind of migrating crabs on YouTube or whatever, it's really an impressive sight because it's just such a weird thing for these little animals to be doing. Like, we don't think of crabs behaving in social ways, and therefore it's quite a curious sight. And I think that real behavior of crabs is what inspires the Crab Man's occasional break from passive docility and you know, instead going out and rampaging around. But the real start, you know, in some ways I feel bad because I feel like this is an episode. The two monsters in this episode are both notable really mainly for their art, because Alan Hunter's depiction of the Crab Man is marvelous. And he gives them this friendly, kind of dopey expression, which again is kind of consistent with the model. I don't know what came first, Hunter's illustration. Well, presumably if the Crab Man's not in the Fiend Factory column, and Hunter did his work for this book, I mean, I don't know when the art was commissioned, because we know that there were troubles that delayed the Fiend Folio, right, which was originally intended for release in 1979. So I don't know where in the process of production this art got commissioned, whether it was before or after the miniature. I sort of feel like most of the Fiend Factory models are kind of roughly contemporary with the book, but I don't know off the top of my head. So I don't know whether the model is based on Hunter's artwork or Hunter's artwork is based on the model. But it is delightful, and it makes you sort of feel bad for these crabmen who are getting, you know, beat up by a party of adventurers. Although one of them is carrying a young lady off into the crab people's cave, which seems like an odd thing for a crabman to do, unless she happens to be made out of silver. But, you know, adventure art tropes die hard, I suppose. Anyway, the crabmen are interesting mechanically, just in that they have a lot of hit points, but they're not all that dangerous, which represents the idea that they're big, but not necessarily aggressive. But a lot of them could be quite hard to kill, and you would start to worry that all those D4 attacks would wind up kind of nickel and diming you to death. The armored torso of the Crab Man has a kind of flared projection around the hips. It sort of protects the hip joint that really makes me think of the Ice Warriors from Doctor Who. I wonder if Alan Hunter, to some degree, modeled the design of the Crab Man, or the miniature sculptor, you know, modeled it on the Ice Warriors. Anyway, yeah, the real star here is the art, but it's a very characteristically Ian Livingstonian monster in that it is, you know, taking a kind of nature show fun fact and extrapolating it into an interesting creature. And then Hunter's art really seals the deal by giving the Crab Man a personality, kind of cheerful and dim. Their intelligence low to average. So, you know, they're sort of goofy, but you can actually see the role that these goofs would play, particularly in the idea that they get attacked by Sahuagin. So, like, these poor goofs are being preyed on by these vicious sea killers, basically just for the crime of being delicious. Next up we have The Crypt Thing by Roger Musson. And this is a monster that is different from the Crab Man in a lot of ways, and similar in one. Similar in one because it is the art that really sells it here, which I believe is by Russ Nicholson. And I'll come back to it in a second. Because here's the thing about The Crypt Thing. It is a mechanic looking for a context. The Crypt Thing is an undead creature, and it's pretty much, you know, kind of a wise old skeleton that can claw you and stuff, and, you know, who cares. But it has this special ability, which is that it can teleport people. So once per day, it can teleport anyone it can see, and where they go is random. So they can go, you know, D10 100 feet in any direction, or they can go one level up or down within a dungeon. So the idea, I take it, is that the impact that the Crypt Thing has is that it separates the party, right? And that means that things that are challenges that the party could normally deal with easily could become very serious problems for the party members trying to work their way back to where they came from, and that the members of the party who didn't get teleported, because you get a save, would then have to go and look for their comrades. That is, if they knew what the Crypt Thing was. Because if you know what it is, then this becomes a lot of fun, because the Crypt Thing can do this, sorry, it's not once per day, it can do it an unlimited number of times per day, but it can only do it once per party that it's encountered. So once you have been teleported by the Crypt Thing, you can't be teleported again. So your rescue mission for your missing party members becomes kind of an opportunity. So now you can get past it and get through to the whatever it is that you're trying to get to, as long as you know that fact. The Crypt Thing being interesting really depends on knowing two things about it. First, knowing what it does, because of course from the perspective of the party member who has just seen her comrades vanish into thin air, she has no idea where they are, right? They could be on the moon, they could be dead, they could be on a different plane, they could be there and just be invisible. And in fact, there is a Crypt Thing variant which turns people invisible and paralyzes them, right? So that's a little joke, basically, because once you get into that world where everybody knows everything about a monster, people are like, oh, I know what this does. It teleports you. Well, no, ha ha. Instead, it does something deadly that just looks like you got teleported. Ho ho ho. Forget about that variant of the Crypt Thing, and let's focus on the main one, which all the rules in this section are devoted to. So, the Crypt Thing works really well with what I think is the implied context. Now, later editions of Dungeons & Dragons made this more explicit. So in second edition, the write-up for the Crypt Thing includes this idea that is basically a guardian set to protect a tomb, right? This is like a trap intended to deter tomb robbers. So in come a bunch of thieves, and the Crypt Thing sees them, and alakazam, it teleports them off to different levels of this tomb-stroke-dungeon, where presumably they meet a grisly fate. And then if that doesn't work, you know, once just one or two members are left, like, instead of being surrounded by, you know, strapping barbarians, the puny wizard is now forced to, you know, use his staff to fend off this thing in its bony claws. Not a super terrifying combat opponent, unless, say, all your tough fighters just got teleported to the acid pit on the other side of the dungeon. So presumably by researching this tomb complex or speaking to the ghosts of the people who built it or, you know, finding those moldering old parchments in the abandoned wizard's quarters or whatever it might be, you can find out what the Crypt Thing is and why it was set to guard the place. And I think if your assumption is that a monster book entry is a complete thing, then you look at the Crypt Thing and you kind of go, huh? You know, it's basically just a landmine in the form of a monster encounter. And I think it becomes a lot more interesting once you start to extrapolate a context for it. The other thing about the Crypt Thing is it has two illustrations. One of them shows a skeleton in a robe, which is what a Crypt Thing looks like. Fine, nothing wrong with that. The other one shows a similar robed skeleton, but sitting in a throne with the kind of like expression and posture that I would associate with a mastermind of some kind, and a mysterious veiled swordsman standing next to it. And it's such a good and evocative illustration. I look at it and I just want to be like, who's this guy? What's his deal? Is he one of the Crypt Thing's minions? I didn't know they could have minions. Is he a henchman? Is he the last survivor of the party? Like looking around in bewilderment going, where are my friends? We don't know who that guy is and what he's supposed to be doing, but he looks terrific. Whatever he's doing, he's certainly doing the heck out of it. So whereas the Crabman is a kind of mechanically uninteresting monster that works because of the context, the Crypt Thing is a monster that is all mechanic and kind of needs us to supply its context. But what they both have in common is that they have absolutely stellar art that really takes them to the next level, adding a layer of dopey relatability to the Crabman and sinister mystery to the Crypt Thing. And once again, I think all you have to do is get out the Fiend Folio and put it side by side with the Monster Manual or even Deities and Demigods to see the enormous next level leap in the quality of the art. Not that there aren't some good illustrators in the Monster Manual. I've, you know, said before what a big Dave Trompier fan I am, and also there are times when even Sutherland's art, which I'm normally not an enormous fan of, I do feel really stands out. You know, he captures a thing really well. But Russ Nicholson is on some next level game. Anyway, I think these are actually a couple of pretty solid monsters, even though in some ways they're representative of the slight incompleteness of some of the critters that we're finding here in the Fiend Folio. And if I was cynical old James, I would be saying like, yeah, you know, who cares? Ignore them. But that's not how we do things on this show. Instead, we're going to take monsters that are maybe incomplete and kind of look at what we need to do to make them complete. And I think for the Crypt Thing, the answer is just give it that mystery context. You know, make its ability something that contributes to a puzzle. And I think it's a little more compelling if you do that. And also maybe give it a personality. I mean, no reason that you can't interact with it. It's intelligence verity, after all. It might know a lot of stuff about the dungeon, assuming you could find a way to persuade it to tell you. All right, that's about all the time we have for today. Please join me next time as we begin the D chapter of the Fiend Folio on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monstermanpod. Monster Man, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.